When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It's a delight to spend time with Eleanor Barraclough. Her new book is Embers of the Hands, Hidden Histories of the Viking Age. We have the Vikings as raiders, but what about as conquerors? Quickly now, the Carolingian Empire is falling apart in mainland Europe. The Vikings are very good raiders, and they do very well. They raid Paris, and Eleanor reports that they walked away with 7,000 pounds of gold. Good God. At the same time, they decide to bring an army and conquer England. East Anglia, Northumbria, and Mercia all fall. Only Wessex holds out. So you're English, Eleanor, but you're Norse. Is that it? Is this your origin story in the United Kingdom?
So the thing with the United Kingdom is there are so many origin stories, and that's what makes it such a fascinating melting pot of cultural influences and incomers. I mean, the Anglo-Saxons are sort of what we tend to characterise these kingdoms at the time of the sort of Norse incursions, as you say, you know, this proper, you know, more military conquest style invasion. But of course, the Anglo-Saxons themselves are different cultural groups that have come over to England a few centuries earlier. Before then, it's the Romans, you know, so it's much more interesting, you know, and it's much more complicated, that sort of melting pot. But certainly, yes, what's sometimes called the Great Heathen Army, that like Mitchell, Hadhan Hera in Old English, arrives in around 865. And it's been suggested that actually, rather than thinking of it as one big invading force, it's more useful to think of it as smaller mobile war bands with different leaders, which makes it much more possible for them to essentially, you know, nip in through the waterways, they can overwinter, and then they can keep going inland, and they have then the element of surprise. They can also sort of split up. Some can head north, some can head south. And that makes it much more difficult to predict what's going to happen. And that seems to be the case. As you say, kingdoms start to topple. And then you end up with this very interesting situation where we have to bring in Alfred the Great, as he's later known, as King Alfred. And he ends up, essentially, you know, there are other people about. So, you know, the problem is that the main textual sources for the time, particularly the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, is written very much from Alfred's perspective. So, of course, he's going to make sure everyone knows just how important he was. But even so, there's truth in that. We get to the point where he's the only, or his sort of, you know, his forces are the only ones that are able to defeat the Norse invaders under one of the leaders who's called Guthrum. And Alfred and Guthrum make peace, and they draw up this astonishing agreement. And we're talking sort of around, I don't know, 878, 880 going up. It's sort of towards the end of the 9th century. And it's not Guthrum and the Norse, you know, the Vikings, the Scandinavians, they're all going to leave. It's more of a stalemate. And so what they decide is that the Norse will actually control, legally, politically, a vast swathe of England, so East Anglia, going up to the north, what's now Yorkshire, all the way up towards Northumberland. And that's going to be the area that later on becomes known as the Danelaw. It's the area that's under Norse control and Norse sort of legal procedures. And we see that. We see that in place names today. You have in that area that they controlled and they settled in. Because you have, they take over farms, they start to settle with their families. You know, they're living alongside the people who lived there before. We start to see lots of place names that have Old Norse influences in them. And that's a really interesting way of tracking settlement, which is very different to raiding, where obviously they're not going to leave that linguistic imprint in the landscape itself.
I'm speaking with Eleanor Baraclough, and we're talking about the Viking Age. But the Viking Age has a lot of moving parts, and one I wanted to attend to just momentarily, Eleanor. The Rus, meaning rowers. Now, the eastern part of Scandinavia, which we now think of as Sweden and Finland, they moved down the three great rivers of Eurasia, the Volga, the Dnieper, and the one other. And they move all the way down to Kiev. And so what we have in Russia right now is a contest between men and women who are descended from the same people that England's descended from, all mixed up with other parts of Eurasia. Yes, admittedly, it's been several thousand years. But is that correct? The Vikings went in two directions. They went west and they went south.
Yeah, they absolutely did go in lots of different directions. And more recent archaeological evidence points to the sort of the early dawn of the Viking Age, in a way, being as much the story of this eastern expansion or, you know, eastern movement as west, you know, if not more so. The really interesting thing is, so we have, exactly as you say, we have people from the area, you know, that's now Sweden, that led by someone called Rurik, who comes down the waterways and settles all the way to Novgorod in 862. And this is often seen as sort of the major starting point in, in the history of the area, how it then kind of politically develops from that.
Just a moment, Eleanor. We come back because you're making an important 21st century point. Eleanor Baraclough is the author of Embers of the Hands. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.